This is a Pinball News production.
I'd like to find out how many people in the room have placed an order with Jersey Jack Pinball.
Wow. Yeah. Right.
Okay, and while we're checking out Jack's customers, how many of you were customers of Pinball Sales? Okay, that's pretty good. So if we can have anyone that's ordered a pinball machine from Jack at any time, then can we see a show of hands? So that's Wizard of Oz or anything prior.
What do you work for the IRS
or something? just taking notes. Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. So I'm not sure what you know about the people on the team. So we're going to start off with everyone talking for a couple of minutes about their careers, their journey that brought them to Jersey Jack. And then we get into the specifics of what it's like and what's going on at Jersey Jack Pinball. Okay. So on my right, I have the man himself, Jack Guarnieri. So I'm going to give you some of the key points in Jack's career, and I'm sure he will correct me if I get anything wrong. Jack started in pinball in 1975 as a tech guy, running around mainly the New York area, fixing pinball machines on campus.
I feel like this is your life or something.
I haven't got the version. Okay. And then, all right. And then we'll skip forward to 99 when Pinball Sales started up. And Jack did some great work selling games to home users. And I've got some personal experience of that. And I know that his view of customer support is excellent. And the anecdotes I've got about people buying games new in the box and then finding they didn't work, and Jack was on it and didn't wait for the manufacturer to supply the parts. He made sure the customer got the parts to get that game going. And then we skip forward to, I think, the next key point will be 2011, when for some crazy reason he got it into his head to start up a pinball company. And I guess, I think I first met Jack about 15 years ago at a trade show in Las Vegas. And recently he did come over to England and visit for the UK pinball party that was held in August. So I'll hand over to you at this point.
Oh, really? Okay. I think I should get up. It's kind of impolite for me just to sit there. Thank you. Appreciate that. I was a guest. I was lucky to be a guest of Gary's at his mansion. He's got quite a home. It's very pretty. It's a couple blocks from Abbey Road Studios, and he took me for fish and chips and mushy peas, and I ate porridge in the morning, and it was great. It was a great experience. I was sowing my oats. He was very great host, and that was a lot of fun, and I was inducted into the UK Pinball Hall of Fame. I was very embarrassed, but it was a very nice experience for me, and it was very much appreciated. I don't think I deserved it, but I do appreciate it anyway. So this evening, I'm really thrilled, because I don't really get to see these guys much myself, because they're all working out here in Illinois at some undisclosed secret location. If you follow them, you go kind of into a black hole and they disappear into where we're working out of. So, you know, we have Mark Wayner and Chris Graner, and we have Matt Reister. Okay, Reisterer. Okay, I always get the E and the I. And we have Dennis Nordman, and we have Brian Hansen, and we have Jim Thornton, and we have Joe Blackwell, and we have Keith Johnson. I'm only teasing. Joe Balser, I'm going to do that on purpose, Dan. And Keith Johnson and Greg Ferris, okay? And we have Drew Maniscalco, which is unusual that Drew is here. Stand up. You know, Drew is involved in a lot of different support areas of the company, and he just finally officially joined the company recently, but he was, you know, instrumental in several things. And we're lucky that we have a lot of people working with us to help us behind the scenes. A lot of unsung heroes that I may not mention because maybe they don't want to come out yet and say they're helping us with a lot of different things, but it's all appreciated. And so I think what I'll do is I'm going to kind of turn it back to Gary, and then we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to take questions, right? That's the format. So I'm sure I'll get a chance to speak again. I'm never at a loss for words. My wife and my daughter will tell you that. So there's never something that I can't think of saying. And this year I'm also very happy. I appreciate Rob and Mike Pasak. I'll be the speaker at the banquet. So if any of you don't want to come to the banquet for that reason, I completely understand. I'm only going to speak for about 15 minutes. I'm actually going to write myself something to say. So I get up and I speak a few minutes and I sit down, because a lot of times you go to banquets and things, it's very long. And we had a priest, Father Coyne, rest in peace. He used to say, the mind can only absorb what the seat will endure. So pretty much, you know, you just get up, say a few words, be nice, and sit the heck down. All right? So that's what I'm going to do now.
Okay, by way of learning about some of the other people at Jersey Jack Pinball, I'm going to hand over the microphone to Greg Frears and ask him to tell us about his career journey that pulled him to the door of Jersey Jack Pinball.
Hi. Really? All right. I'm a bit tired for that, but that's all right. Yeah, so 78, joined Bally. Worked for Bally for 10 years. Then I got to go over to Williams. I was sold with the furniture, and worked for Williams for 11 years, and had a great time there doing some great games. And then I found myself freelancing, and got the call from Dennis that Jack was looking for me, and Jack found me last year, and so I'm doing the playfield graphics and plastics for Jersey Jack Pinball, and I'm throwing in my 2 cents wherever I can, and we're looking forward to some good stuff in the future. So I don't know if that was too brief, but we got a lot of people up here.
Can you tell us some of the games that you've done art for in the past?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The first game I ever did was Harlem Globetrotters for Bally, and Rolling Stones, Scared Stiff, Star Trek Next Generation, not in any particular order, obviously, you know, the list goes on. That's a few of the highlights, Elvira and the Party Monsters. So, yeah, is that good enough? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. My name is Keith Johnson. I am a programmer at Jersey Jack. I started my career, I guess I'm more or less the noob in this group, but I started at Williams in 1998, worked in slot machines for a couple months, then got asked to help out on Revenge for Mars, which I did. And then Dwight and I were working on the Playboy game when we got shut down 13 years ago, or however long it was. And so then I went over to Stern, where I was lead programmer on High Roller Casino, The Simpsons, Pinball Party, Lord of the Rings, World Poker Tour, Wheel of Fortune. Helped out on a bunch of other games like Austin Powers and Pirates of the Caribbean, Family Guy, and stuff. So, yeah, and you know, we're doing really good on Wizard of Oz so far, and look forward to surprising you guys with a bunch of stuff that I think we're going to surprise a lot of people with what we come up with. So, you know, probably not going to be able to talk about it too much, but I think you all will enjoy it when you finally get to see it.
Hi, I'm Joe Blackwell. And I'm Joe Balser. How are you? Really glad y'all can make it out tonight. My career started at Midway, early 80s. I was working at a gas station, working on cars. I had a customer that said, hey, Joe, I hear you work in a tool room. I get you a job. My nephew get you a job. And I said it's a place called Midway Manufacturing in Franklin Park. And they send me over there, and it's this big white building, and I'm a kid. And I walk in, and they have one of them signs made that, you know, welcomes people when they come into this big vestibule, and it says, you know, Midway Manufacturing welcomes Joe Balser. And I was, that's me. And so I started in the tool room there, got a job there, and was doing fixtures, line fixtures for the line, for the production line. And then got into doing the production fixtures for pinball, and started on, the first pinball I worked on was Granny and the Gators, the video pin, and did the pants press fixture, as Gary likes to call it, the trouser press fixture, and it kind of went from there. So I lasted a few years there, left Bally on a big layoff, Midway on a big layoff, ended up going from there to Wico, and we did a game there called Aftor, and I did, not any of the layout, that was Claude Fernandez. If everybody knows Claude, or anyone knows Claude. So I was doing the line fixtures there. We did a lot there, and then they shut the doors pretty abruptly one day when Max Wixer walked in and said, we're done. And then waited a little while, got a job at Premier, worked for Premier for about 7 years, doing, again, line fixtures and everything, and then started to move more into engineering, learning more about the games, started to pick up AutoCAD at the time. And then Premier stopped. They shut it down. And then, so I don't know if it was me or... Jack, you might want to... I don't know. I get to be there when they shut the door. I don't know. So.
You got to be there when we opened the door.
Yeah, we did that too, yeah. So after Premier, got a job at Data East. Again, working in kind of tool room type of thing, working fixtures, things like that a little bit. But really on the engineering side, and then started to learn more and more how to do layouts. And the first layout I did there was Baywatch. So, you know, I worked on a lot of games there. The ones that I did, more of my own layouts, were Baywatch, and then it went to Apollo 13, Godzilla, Star Wars, Starship Troopers. South Park was a fun game to do. All the way through, the last game I did there was Simpsons Pinball Party. And then I moved on to bigger and better things, which included starting ShuffleAlley.com, where we did a remake of the old Puck Bowler, which went for a little while. And Jack approached me a while later and talked about pinball. Worked with Jack at Elout USA for about a year, and then moved over to Jersey Jack when this thing started. So it's been a while. I think next year will probably is like 30 years around coin-op and pinball. So it's been a long, fun little ride. So that's me.
Hello, I am Jim Thornton, probably the least known of the group. But I've been around the industry pretty much since birth. Started off the industry at Linksmith, building cabinets, putting them all together, working in a tool room. Did that for a year until that didn't work out so much. Then basically moved on to the distributor end for a little while. Worked at the time was Atlas Distributing, doing some technical support. Did that for a few years. Then finally found my way into pinball to Data East at the time, which was my first game. Working there was Star Trek. Worked on the line, just a technical guy, just going through, working on the games, testing them out. Kind of slowly moved up through there. Actually stayed there for about 11 years. Worked all the way through technical support, working under Joe Blackwell for a few years. Did all the eight, yeah. The real Joe Blackwell. Did that for about 11 years. Moved on after that for a little while. Picked up a little time here with Jack and worked with Joe again and Jack with Shuffle Alley. which we ran for a good 2 years, almost three. Then kind of left the industry for a little while and kind of sat back for a little while and got the call to come back. Just when you think you're out, they drag you back in. And my duties over at Jersey Jack include purchasing, bill of materials, a lot of support for these guys. There's a lot of good guys that work with us. We've got a really good group and very talented. These guys are putting their heart and soul into this game right now, all for you guys. So hope you guys enjoy it.
Next.
I'm Brian Hansen. I started in the industry back around in 1976, working as an operator in Chicago for my uncle's place. Did that up until 93 or so, about 18 years. Got hired on at Capcom. I did two out of the four pinballs we did, Pinball Magic and Flipper Football. And after Capcom closed, I did a few miscellaneous things. And then, since around 2000, I've had a couple startup companies that I did, Jupiter Games, Pixie Games, and now I have my other company, Intergainment, which basically does still in coin op. I do redemption games, merchandisers, design the games, build some of them. Some of them I just license the ideas. And currently doing that still, and then got called on by Jack to come on board and join them. And inside the company right now, I basically do miscellaneous mechs and things like that on the game, because it was pretty much well underway since I started it, right? I guess that's about it for now. You guys will probably find out some more later if you got any other questions.
Thanks, Brian.
Hi, I'm Dennis Nordman, and I'll be brief. I moved to Chicago, I designed some games, and Jack hired me. Thank you. Well, I started back in 1980, I think. I majored in industrial design at Ohio State, and I designed, in my senior year, I designed a futuristic pinball cabinet, and I brought it out to Bally, and I got hired to do cabinet design. And the first cabinet I designed was Rapid Fire. And then I got laid off. That's a thread that just runs throughout this industry for a lot of people. And then I got hired again at Bally, and I did my first pinball game was Special Force. And and then I did Special Force, Party Animal, and Blackwater 100, and then I got laid off. And then, what did I do after that? I wandered around I did some redemption games. I worked for IGT for a while, designing some slot machine stuff. And I went back to Bally, I guess. And then we went to Williams. And that's when I did Elvira with Greg and Scared Stiff and Whitewater and Demolition Man and Indy 500, Dr. Dude. And Chris worked on a lot of my games. And then I got laid off again. And then I got hired at Stern, and I did Pirates of the Caribbean and Wheel of Fortune with Keith and Chris. No, not Chris. My memory's going. And then I got laid off again. So I think I got laid off more than I designed games. And then... fortunately, Jack gave me a call and asked me if I'd like to design another pinball game, and I said, absolutely. So I'm doing a little bit of work on Wizard of Oz, and I'm starting to work on my own game for Jack. That's it.
No, got to get... Yeah, thank you. I'm Matt Reister. I'm unfortunately don't have an amazing background like everybody here in years and years of making awesome and amazing games. I just started about 10 years ago restoring games, making mods and things like that, probably about 6-7 years ago, opened my own company doing that, and met Jack that way, got a game off him, started showing him what, you know, I could do and, you know, make, and telling him that a lot of games, instead of buying toys and just putting toys in them, some off the shelf and just throwing it in, or piece of butyrate and putting that in, should be something more to it. You know, don't take away from the game. And, you know, earlier this year in March, he gave me a call and said, you know, love to have you work. So it was, it still is an amazing honor to be doing this and just making lots of really cool things for the games. Definitely learning a lot, you know, from everyone here on what makes pinball great. And it's nice that my education from pinball is coming from everybody here who, in my eyes, is the best at it. So it's just really cool and awesome, and plan on really proving myself, because I definitely got big shoes to fill around here. So basically with Jack, what I do is I make the toys. So any of the toys that will be in the game is what I do. And from there, I'll end up manufacturing them and making them for the game. That's about it. Pretty short.
I'm Chris Graner. thanks. I started in 86 at Williams. I almost started in 84 at GameStar, but I got laid off before they hired me. So I kind of got the layoff thing out of the way early, but started in 86 with for real with Williams. Road Kings was the first game with Mark Ritchie, first of many unbelievable collaborations with Mark Ritchie. Still one of my heroes. Did, I don't know, 20 games or something like that before I got some kind of a weird itch and went to Capcom Coin-Op, where I met Mr. Hansen here, and probably a few people who are out in the audience. And we had a kind of a surreal ride over there, but got to help out on all the sound packages. And the Kingpin game that's floating around, you know, from place to place, is one that I did that soundtrack. Was the one thing that I did by myself there. Took a detour to Incredible Technologies and ran their sound department from 97 to 2001. At that point, the side projects were stacking up, and Elaine decided that I should probably have IT as a side project. So that was kind of how it went for one project, and that was the last piece of work that I got from her. But fortunately, Pat Lawler had called and hooked me up on Monopoly, and so we did Monopoly with Pat at Stern with Gary. And I was doing a few other freelance things at that point when Dan Forden, my colleague, you know, fabulous composer, sound designer, who's now running the sound department down at, I guess it's Warner Games now, or at WB Games or something like that, this Chicago studio, had been working on Simpsons with Keith, had to bail because he had gotten too busy and said, could I step in? So I was back in the game with Stern and working with Keith for the first time, and kind of had a real, that was a real eye-opening experience, I got to tell you. We'll talk some more about that, I'm sure. But so I did Simpsons and, I don't know, what, another 7 or 8 games with Stern through 2005, 2006, WPT. Then I retired. Don't ask me what I was thinking. But my return to pinball started a year ago tonight when I came back to this event for the Williams, you know, love fest that we had last year that Larry DeMar put together. And I got into an argument, and I just read this great book about pragmatic sustainability, and I was in this big argument with a guy from Germany, Martin Weiss. Is Martin here? He didn't make it? Oh, wow. He didn't want to argue with me, exactly. We were arguing about nuclear power, and we'd been talking for 10 minutes and kind of nose to nose, and finally I said, oh, gee, you know, I'm Chris Graner. And he goes, I know who you are. And would you sign this thing for me? You know, so that, it was really cool. You know, I mean, I got to tell the great story about Arnold and, hello, this is Mr. Schwarzenegger. You know, that, you know, and fuck you, asshole, and that whole thing. That was a great story. And And I got a standing ovation from you guys. So you guys brought me back, and I'm so, I'm really grateful. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's so great to be here.
Hi, Mark Wayna. I know most of you from being out there and having a booth and being a collector for 20-some-odd years. I joined the industry in, what, 95, as a consultant to work on Indy 500 with Dennis. After that, worked with Greg and Dennis on Scared Stiff, which was great. That was great fun. After that, I did Cash Ball, which was that play field that went on top of a slot that was done for Anchor Games and IGT. From there, I moved during Pinball 2000 development. I did a little bit there, but then I moved to the Midway side of the building because I was handling all the testing for Pin 2000 through Midway. Stayed with Midway until they went out of CoinOp, and then left the industry to be a stay-at-home dad for a while, and sold mechanical music machines, music boxes, and stuff like that from the house. Rejoined Greg and Dennis to do the Whizbang game that I'm sure you guys have all seen out there, and through that, got drawn into the Wizard of Oz project, and really glad to be here. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. My name is Drew Maniscalco. I've been in the business almost 25 years now. Started with Nintendo back in 1987. I've been with basically almost every video game company, with the exception of Konami. They went out of business before I got there. it's true. My role at Jersey Jack Pinball started really with Jack and I working at Elout. And one weekend, he calls me and says, "You know what? I think I'm going to announce that I'm going to start a pinball company." I was like, "Oh, okay." And if you know Jack, when he says something, he does it. So I guess it was, what, January 1st or 2nd, the famous podcast happened, and here we are 8-9 months later. And I got to tell you, you know, for the people who have purchased this game, you know, we've seen it. You guys really don't know what you're going to get. I mean, I really can't put it into words. This is, again, in my opinion, the greatest pinball machine that you will ever buy. Pretty big, put a lot of pressure on the guys, but I've seen it, I've played it, and I'm only telling you from what I've seen. One cute little thing, Roger actually, 5 years ago, came to Doug and myself, Doug Duba from Chicago Gaming, and had mentioned the title Wizard of Oz. And you know, Doug was saying, "Well, what do you think?" And I'm like, "You know, I don't know, you know, Wizard of Oz." And Doug is like, "You know, I really wouldn't want that game in my basement. I wouldn't want to play Wizard of Oz." And so we passed on it. So 5 years, 6 years go by, I'm working with Jack. And he says, "You know, for this pinball, I'd really like to do a license." So I said, "Well, I know someone. You know, let me see, you know, what we can do." So I call up. I get a sheet, and it has, you know, 40, 50 titles, really gigantic titles. Calls me back and he says, "Get me the Wizard of Oz." And I said, "Really? Wizard of Oz? With everything that's on there, you want the Wizard of Oz? Get me the Wizard of Oz." And so we got the Wizard of Oz. I went back and watched the movie, and I was like, "Wow, you know what? Roger was right. This really is a great title." The slot machines are the number one games. They've overtaken Wizard of Oz, right, Raj? I've got Wizard of Oz on the brain. Right. Yeah, it really is. I went back, I saw the movie, and I'm thinking, you know, this really, what a, you know, for a movie that's 80 years old, there's really a tremendous story there. The characters are just fantastic. And the guys, I'm telling you guys, when you see this game, you're not going to believe it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. No pressure. Okay, so now we know who everyone on the stage is. And I've got one question for you, Jack. Are you mad? Why do you want to start a pinball company in 2011?
Yeah, you know, I actually asked Brian Hansen a good question a few weeks ago. And I feel like maybe some of the ladies, when you're ready to have, maybe you're pregnant, you know, 8 months, and I guess like my wife was after our two kids, you know, you really want to have the baby already, and I think that's how I feel with this game. So I asked Brian Hansen, you know, what do you guys are killing me. You know, where is this game already? When is it going to be done? You know, how come it's not done already? And Brian said,
Because we didn't start on it earlier.
Okay. So, you know, you ask a silly question and you get a silly answer. Why did I do this? You said, okay, because it had to be done. It was basically that simple. I was selling thousands of Stern pinball machines, and I promoted that company since 2000 as a distributor. I became the hey, it's Jason Ruffer in there, man. Show your tattoo, dude. I'll get you later. All right. You know, I promoted that company relentlessly. I spent a lot of money. I spent a lot of my time. My heart and my soul was in it because that was pinball, and it was great, and we had some really great years. But in later years, I couldn't sell any games. You know, I went from selling about 1,500 games in a high year, you know, to selling like 40 games. And I kind of refused to believe that it was the economy. We sell everything nobody needs at pinballsales.com. That's a trademark saying. It's kind of silly to say that to people, but it's true. People weren't buying a pinball machine with their last $4,000. And I had to just decide, well, I'm going to stop doing this, or what am I going to do? I'm going to start a pinball company. And some of you that were here last year, I sat in this room when other people were talking, and I was walking through Expo, and I had with me Drew and Joe, and I think Jim was with us, and there was Ben Heckendorn, and there was Lyman, and there was Rick Bartlett and Matt Cristiano. And, you know, we're walking through here, and in fact, Jason says, it looks like you're walking around with a pinball company, Jack. What the heck is going on? You know, and it, remember that? It's kind of perceptive. And, you know, Roger comes to me, and he says, hey, I hear you got something going on. What's doing? And I can't lie to him. He's a good friend. And I said, yeah, something's going on. His eyes got real wide. And I said, maybe we can do this. And, you know, before I announced it, I had to put a lot of pieces together to make sure that we could build the kind of game that I wanted to play. Something that would really be fun. Something that would have newer technology that wasn't being done by Stern Pinball. Because when you have anything and you're a monopoly, there's nobody pushing you to do anything. Why do I have to do that? Well, guess what? They've been doing a lot of things since I pushed them to do it. I see Gary in parts of the country where I never saw him before, meeting people he never met before. I see them spending money on things they never spent money on before. I see them hiring people they really don't like. But you know what? Politics and our industry make strange bedfellows. And there was a guy, Harry Warner, let's stay with the Warner Brothers theme. He said, there's nothing wrong with the movie industry that a good movie wouldn't fix. Well, there's nothing wrong with our industry that a really good game wouldn't fix. There's nothing wrong with pinball that a really good game will not fix. This is the game that we're designing now, and we're going to be building it, okay? And Drew is right. Drew knows me a lot of years. All these guys, they've all been laid off before. I was never laid off from anywhere, okay? I never got fired from a job. I never had a company that went bankrupt, thank God. I'm not participating in the recession, even the past several years. I'm doing everything I need to do to run a company and build a company. What kind of maniac is going to start a company in this industry, hiring hundreds of people, spending millions of dollars doing something? When I announced that I was going to do this, some people laughed. There were some people that didn't really know me. One guy said, come on in, the water's cold. That freaking water is boiling right now, I'll tell you that. Right? No, we're not going to get into who said it to me. Who said that already? But look, you know, it's hard to doubt somebody when I won't fail because I won't give up. And everybody as an individual, you have this ability to do this yourself in your lives, to make a change and to do things and to be positively motivated. And, you know, I was wondering who was even going to be running our production at our building in New Jersey, because we're building a factory. Somebody sent me a resume 2 weeks ago that's been in the industry 42 years, that lives in New Jersey, that produced thousands of games at three different factories over those years. And I hired him, and he's going to start on Monday. He's going to be our production manager. His name is Ken Holland, and you guys will meet him another time. So, you know, so why I started it is because I believe that, and I'm not, look, you know what, a funny thing, I don't want to say, you know, I'm trying to save pinball, I'm not trying to create a legacy for myself, I'm not trying to save pinball, I don't need to be on the Mount Rushmore of pinball people along with, you know, Harry Williams, God rest his soul, and Alvin Gottlieb and all these people. I'm just doing this to make a product that people want to play and people love, because I love it. And what happens after that, when this game comes out, it'll go where it goes. People will love it. I think a lot more people will love it than don't love it. So I can't wait until the game does its talking, and I don't really have to do the talking for it. So that's going to happen soon. So I did it because I felt it needed to be done. And there was nobody else in the world, apparently, that was going to do it. And I'll tell you one other thing. If I watched that movie, Tilt, The Battle to Save Pinball, I watched it on a plane to Aruba in August. And you know what? If I watched that movie before I thought about doing this, I would have been had the crap scared out of me, and I never would have done this. I did this because I was too stupid to know any better, all right? So think of that statement, okay? Sometimes people in their lives, they get paralysis by analysis, and they overanalyze everything. When you're an entrepreneur, you know, there's some in the room that I see. When you're an entrepreneur, it's kind of like a danger because you think you can fly without a net, and sometimes you really can. But if you get, I don't have to know about building a pinball machine. All of these guys know how to build a pinball machine, okay? All I have to do is guide them a little, take my pen and write some checks, and everything happens. So that's that part of that story, all right? That's a big, long answer for you. I hope you're
happy.
That's
fine. That's
you're
fine.
A pain in the neck, you know.
Good. All that's right. My job.
Okay.
So so it's nice to know about how the company came into being. I'd like to get some of the other guys involved at this point. I'm going to go over to Greg. Greg, I'm really pleased that you're involved in these projects because I think above all other people, you really capture the ethos of pinball art. So I'm glad you're doing the playing field and everything associated with that. And I guess the question is, well, it's twofold really. It's kind of where are you up to? What have you got planned? Threefold then. And you're not doing a whole art package this time. So how does that work? Where are you up to, and what have you got planned?
I got it. Where am I up to on Wizard of Oz playfield artwork? It's coming along. And like Jack said, he did ask me that recently a couple of times. Where are you, Greg? And it's coming along, right, Jack? It's there. It's there. It's still a rough sketch. And it's, you know, there's... It's got a lot of Photoshop stuff going on it, but don't worry about that. I'm gonna get this thing motivated, and it's gonna be nice. This is a lot of pressure, you know. It's like everybody's, you know, everybody's been asking me, what is exactly, what, you know, are you gonna hand draw this thing? Absolutely. It'll be stand up. All right. All right. Yeah, I will hand-draw the artwork. If anybody's not seen the Big Juicy Melon project yet, hand-drawn artwork. I won't put any references like that on The Wizard of Oz because I can't. But anyway, yeah, so that's it's coming along. It's a rough sketch, and I'm using Photoshop as a way to get it going and move things around and that kind of thing. But it's coming along.
Okay, and if anyone wants to see Wonelli, where do they go?
Well, this isn't about Wonelli, but it's right around the corner. Just come and see us. We're out on the floor.
Okay. And my other question was that you're not doing a whole graphics package.
Right.
So how does that work out, working in conjunction with another artist?
It's working out. It'll work out fine. I've worked with other artists before, John Yausi and stuff like that. So Jerry was hired early on. Jerry Vanderstelt, and he was hired before I was, and so he moved forward with what he did. And, you know, I'll take from what he's done and make sure that it blends together and that it makes sense and that kind of good stuff. So it's, and this is going to be unique. I mean, like everybody else is saying, we've got a whole new palette to play with. So very excited about that. And, you know, so it's all going to work together just like any other package I've done in the past, where a couple of artists have worked together. I will make sure that that the play field is just as stunning as the backglass artwork or the cabinet artwork, and make sure that happens appropriately. And I do want to say, yes, he's as mad as a hatter. And we get to see that once a week on Skype. We have weekly meetings, and Jack is definitely mad as a hatter. So just to answer your first question from before.
Okay,
so.
Thank you for that. I guess a question for the team. Who's looking after the game rules on Wizard of Oz?
Turn that way.
The what? The rules?
The game rules.
Yeah.
So it seems like you've got a lot on your plate, Keith, because you're doing the operating system, the game rules. All by yourself?
Yep, all by myself.
What, have they invented a 36-hour day for you?
Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time. One of the great things about this job is that I'm able to spend most of my time at home. So, you know, before, like at Stern or whatever, even at Williams, Williams, we had a lot of late nights trying to get ready for ATEI, trying to get Revenge from Mars ready to be shown and, you know, Wow the World or whatever we did. I spent lots of late nights at Stern, particularly on World Poker Tour. And, you go there, get there like 11 o'clock or so, work till 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, almost drive off the road because you're falling asleep. You know, that's all done now. You know, I can work till 4 or 5 in the morning and, you know, hopefully make it up to bed. That's the least thing I got to worry about. So, you know, I can do all the work that I have to do, which is a lot because, yes, I have to do an operating system from scratch. And I have to, I have to bring all the artwork, you know, and the video together, all the sound together, get boards working, and, you know, it's a lot of stuff to do. But, you know, it's been really great being able to work from home and spend the time necessary to do it, and, you know, we'll get a really great package done for you guys.
Okay, that's cool. So as a software guy, you're looking after, well, there's no dots this case. Does that make it easier or hard or just different?
Well, no, I mean, dots are easier because there's fewer of them.
Okay.
You know, it's like you have 128 by 32, and now we're working with a 26-inch LCD that's, you know, it's the 1366 by 768 resolution that most monitors are in the arcades are at nowadays. Like all the play mechanic stuff runs at that resolution. So yeah, there's more stuff to do, and you know, obviously colors and all that. So, but fortunately, I have Greg, you know, to help with, you know, directing a lot of stuff because, you know, I'm a programmer and I can kind of do some art, but you know, not like an artist can. And we've got a guy working with us that's doing really, really amazing stuff that, you know, he's going to blow everyone away with what he's doing. I know that everyone up here has already been wowed by him. So.
Is this the guy overseas?
Yeah.
Yeah. What country? What country?
We're not going that far right now, I guess.
Pardon?
He's from Holland.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'd seen he was in Belgium, so I just wanted to clarify that one.
He's in the Netherlands country.
Right. Right. Okay, that's great. Okay.
Ik spreek een beetje Nederlands.
Wow.
For those who are... Tot ziens.
Okay. Thanks very much, Keith. Let's throw it out to the audience, see what sort of questions they've got.
Maybe they got Anyone? Some better questions than you have.
Let's hope so. Right at the back.
All right.
The wall.
Anybody in the audience? Yes? Pinlicious.
I'm wondering, what's the target market for a soft
Uh,
I think that's a question for Roger Sharp. Target market for slot machines? Oh, no, that's not how we did it. That's how Roger might have done it. Come here, Roger. Come on up here. Come on. Everybody, Roger Sharp, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. You know, Roger is, you know, you've heard of the Fifth Beatle? The Fifth Beatle? Well, he's our Fifth Beatle, actually. He really is.
Right. Catch me mid-candy. I guess with Wizard of Oz. Go for it. I almost have enough to share. The slot machine idea actually started with a conversation, and Drew was right, with Warner Brothers, where I said, would there be any interest in doing a pinball machine? Yes. And I said, I talked to you about doing a slot machine, but I know that that answer is no. And the reason for it is I actually wanted to do Wizard of Oz when Williams and Bally was still in the pinball business. So we're talking back in the mid-90s. Didn't really get anybody kind of interested and jazzed about it. When World of Slot Machines started for us in around 91, 92, MGM had the rights, and they weren't available for slot machines. So just a little aside, I don't want to hog time here, but we have a 55-year-old Kmart shopping woman as the primary target for slot machines. The difference in this day and age now, and that was true about 5 or 6 years ago, is number one, the accessibility of slots everywhere, or almost everywhere. The fact that the age has reduced down to about 25 to 35 as being one of the primary targets. If you take a look at IGT, one of their newest titles right now is The Hangover. So if you're questioning or asking about the relevance for Wizard of Oz for a pinball audience, I think you're looking at something that is timeless. To Drew's point and Jack and everybody else, I mean, all you have to do is just watch the story. You have great characters. You have great sets. You have great dynamics in terms of, we'll call it good and evil. It has all of the elements that you would ever want. You add in the music, and you add in all the other memorable characters. I mean, what better way to translate into a pinball machine? So that's it.
Very cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. So talking of the dynamics, can I ask the team, who came up with the great idea of making it a wide-bodied game? How did that come about?
Okay, so wide body. We met in Chicago. We had a great dinner at Gibson's, and then the next day we were locked up in a room down in Rosemont, a bunch of us, where we were talking about what we're going to do and what we want the game to be. And actually Roger was there, and Josh and Zach were there in the morning, and we talked pinball, and Rick Bartlett was there. And Joe had sketched up some things already in advance of that meeting, and he put them up on the wall. And it wasn't until maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon of this whole marathon day that when we were listing all the things we wanted to see in a game, everybody kind of looked at each other and said, the only way all of these things are going to fit in a game is if we do a wide body game. So it was that day. It was, you know, I think it was January 28th, 29th, something like that, where we all decided unanimously, everybody there, that we were going to do a wide body. And actually, I have, it's funny that you mentioned that. Maybe I can pull this up. You know, there's been some things said about the wood used in a wide body game. And I heard at a, do we have that? Let's see some. I don't know if anybody will be able to see this, but okay. So what we have here, you know, at Pacific Pinball Expo, Gary Stern said that it takes a special piece of wood to build a wide body. He was asked if he was planning to build a wide body, and he kept saying there's this special wood. So I got on my unicorn and I flew to the top of a mountain. And I went to the tree that grows wide body wood. Okay? So there is the tree. You guys won't believe me, you know? Come on. Behind me is game number two, actually. And in the further distance are other games that are being grown right now. So to allay anybody's fear that bought this game, we have the wood, okay, to make a wide body game, because it's a special piece of wood that goes in there, all right? And I just wanted to get that out there, all right?
Jack, while you're there by that toy,
yes.
Have you got anything else there that...
Have I got anything else there? Well, what do you mean there? Where there? There's one of my guys laying on the ground setting up an amusement center that we did. Some shots of the Wizard of Oz. These are Photoshop pictures, you know, so that's what the Emerald City game would look like. And last week we sent out a little, in our weekly email, we sent out, you could build your own pinball machine. So some of our customers were very excited. They built these little models that they have on their desk of their game until they get the real game. That's what I have on that at the moment. Maybe I could show you a couple more things in a couple more minutes after you get to the next stage. But again, you know, and the unicorn's name is Horny. That's my unicorn. So, no. Let's keep this clean. It's a family show.
So, a question, I don't know if it's for Jack or the team, but what are the innovations on the game?
Well, okay, let's go. What are the innovations on the game?
The monitor.
The monitor, very good. Okay, that's for 10 points. What else do we have? We have toys that are handmade by Matt. We didn't go to Kmart and clean out the Transformer aisle, right? We got toys that are made, okay? I know, you know what? I'm a little ornery tonight. You know, I'm from Jersey. You know, what can I tell you? You know what? I just put it out there. Right? That's good.
The toys don't just sit there. They actually do something.
Can you give us an example, please?
Right?
A disappearing and a melting witch. It does both.
Right? You have a flying monkey that comes down and grabs the ball off a magnet and brings the ball back to the witch's castle playfield and puts it behind two doors. You have some magnets.
Two upper playfields.
Only two upper playfields, right? By the way, for guys like Derek Musket, who's not here, the game has one ramp. Be very disappointed, but it has two upper playfields. It's got five flippers. It's got three magnets. It's got all Williams parts. It's got an LCD. It's a wide body. It's got two artists, two designers, two engineers, programmers, everybody up the wazoo. I hired all the laid-off guys in the whole industry working for the company now. God's sakes, I'm doing my part again. What other innovations does it have, really?
Three artists, by the way.
You're right. Well, you consider bullshit artist also on the left? No. No. Right? A real artist? Three artists. That's right. We have an animation artist, right? Right. The guy from Holland that we said that was there. Who else? What else?
What's innovative in the software?
Well,
code.
I mean, the biggest thing is driving a, you know, a screen. I mean, you're going to have, I mean, it's going to look sharp, and it's going to be I don't know. It's going to be production values that everyone will love. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be that thing that I threw together for Jack. That's programmer art, you know, right there. You know.
This is what you have to know about. This is just a sort of a connective story where when I first got to Stern and got to work with Keith for the. Thank you. When I first got to Stern and I got to work with Keith for the first time, it really, like I said before, it was a really eye-opening experience. And the thing that was so eye-opening about it was how deep a pinball game could be. And if you've played Keith's games and if you have really, succeeded at them, and you've really gotten into the deep rules, it's just incredible how much stuff he can get into a pinball game. And an innovation I think that I can talk about here that is not, you know, without giving away too much of a trade secret or anything like that, is that the depth of this game is going to be really transparent to everybody. You'll be able to see how deep it is, and you'll be able to have access to that depth right from the monitor most of the time. Most of the time, you'll be able to see several different things that you're trying to accomplish at once. That's the great thing about pinball. It's nonlinear. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on at once. You might, you know, in one... Are you laughing at me? He's no. Laughing at me.
No, I'm not laughing. I'm laughing at them.
Are you being silly? Is it Blackwell? Here? Anyway. Am I right? Am I right? Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Okay, thank you for that. Let's get another question from the floor. Okay, so that's about where's the source of the video? Is it got a graphics card or a graphics chip? Is that right? Okay, so who's the person to answer that?
We're driving a VGA device, so we're basically using an off-the-shelf motherboard. So, you know, it'll be basically a PC inside the game. And, you know, with the VGA port running to the monitor. Coming up with your own solution for driving video is just ridiculous in this day and age, and you can get motherboards for so cheap. So, you know, basically looking at a PC with a custom driver board that our man John Donzilla whipped up. And, wait till you see that thing. And... you know, it was necessary for him to make that because we have so much stuff in this game that no existing hardware would have been able to drive what it is we're attempting to do. So, you know, you all have a pretty good idea of all the mechs in the game, and, you know, there's 1, 2, 3, it's got to be like 4 motors or so, you know, something like that, maybe 5, I forget. You know, all the magnets, all the coils. He's got 4 bumpers and 3 slingshots. And so it all adds up. And so we have a custom driver board capable of driving the Wizard of Oz. And God forbid we make something with even more than what Wizard of Oz has, we can drive that too. We still have room to grow, amazingly. So I guess that fits in the, you know, the innovations.
Okay, another question. Way up at the back again. So is that about the software?
Right.
Yeah, we're going to ship it finished. I mean, Jack isn't interested in shipping a game that, you know, gets more and more stuff out later. I mean, you know, we have a goal date, and, you know, everyone's trying their darndest to get that date met, you know, and I think we will. But will it have everything that everyone's clamoring for? Well, as from a game perspective, everyone's going to love the game. And as the company matures and as we mature and stuff like that, we'll keep adding additional features that aren't specific to playing the game. But, you know, as we, you know, innovate more stuff down the road, you know, the game will be updated with, you know, whatever it is we come out after the game gets released.
Okay. So my understanding is that there's going to be 1,000 limited edition games made initially, and then that will be followed up with the standard arcade piece. My guess is that most of the limited edition games are going to go in private homes. And one of the things I like when I walk into my room where I keep my pins is even when they're not plugged in and switched on, I've got that large area on the back glass that's full of colour done by people like Greg. So now that we've got a monitor in there, what are we going to see when the game's not plugged in? Are we just going to see a dead monitor?
What you're going to see, actually, you have a cutout where the monitor is, and around that is a mirror. It's a mirrored back glass. So you'll see a little bit of something on there. There's still artwork on there. But, you know, when I turn off my 65-inch 3D television that's mounted on the wall, I see this black thing looking at me. So, you know, that's what I kind of see.
Okay.
We've been experimenting with some different glass and some different treatments where I thought maybe we can have an image displayed, and then when the LCD comes on, you're going to see the LCD shine through that image. That's a little bit more futuristic, apparently, than we could think of these things, but we still can't get them because the technology might be there. It's kind of a one-way mirror thing, and it actually cuts down what the monitor looks like, the sharpness of it and the intensity of the picture. So at this point, you know, when we go to an arcade and we have all those games off, we don't really see anything. But then again, you know, you could look at the beautiful cabinet and you can look at the back glass. And
so there'll be a lot of color.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of color. And why would you shut your game off? Just leave it on.
Okay, so will it have a screen? So if I leave it on, what will I see?
What?
So now I'm leaving it on. What am I going to see?
What happens when you close your eyes at night and go to sleep? What do you see?
All sorts of fantastic things.
Well, just imagine, and that's what you're going to see.
Well, is it going to have an attract mode?
I'm going to kick your ass in a minute. You're going to stay on this line of questioning?
Yeah, I want to know what's going to be there when the game's just
I thought you was a friend.
On.
This is a hostile witness, ladies and gentlemen. No, we're only kidding. We had this planned.
Did we? Okay. Thanks for letting me know.
No, it's all good.
Okay, I think young Mr. Shelberg has a question.
What do you want to see on the monitor when it's off, right?
Right.
Okay. This guy is amazing. I just want to say one thing. I know you asked him something. He kind of started out as a customer, okay? And he was doing, like, special things. A lot of people buy, you know, different things from him from Back Alley Creations. I tried getting him hired at another company that was building pinball machines for 3 years, and everybody kept throwing us out of there. So that was another reason I had to start the company, so that he could be in pinball and he could be doing, bringing all these great things to you. So I'm thrilled to have him. He's a young guy. He comes to us with great ideas. We needed some more young blood on the team and somebody that wasn't doing this like 80 years, you know. So, and somebody that didn't get laid off.
As far as the sculptures go, I mean, three of the pieces we already got released, the slippers, the balloon, and the trees. Warner Brothers has been great with us as far as, like, the sculptures we've sent them and stuff for approval and enjoying things. There's, like, about another 7 or 8 pieces I still got to sculpt up in the next coming weeks here. Most of it's just figuring out the different types of material we want the items to be made out of, you know, and making sure that they're not going to break. I don't want to make things that are going to break. You put it in a game. I know there's a metal ball flying around in the game. And, yeah, potentially things could break, but I don't want to put, you know, just something really thin or vacuum-formed in there for a ball to hit. I want to have, you know, something solid. So sculpting-wise, it's just more or less trying to look at the movie and compare what I see in the movie to what works in the pinball world. And a lot of that I definitely reference back to a lot of the guys on the team to help me figure that out, because visually something might look cool to me as, like, an artist. But then when it comes to, you know, it working in the pinball and being, you know, functional, it might not. So, but everything's flowing on great. A lot more to do and some really cool things.
So who on the team looks after parts and service once the games are out there? So, okay, I'm going to put this one to you, Joe. If it's not yours, fire it off in the right direction.
Well, parts and service, I could tell you.
I want to hear someone else's voice. I'm sick of your voice.
Now you sound like Joanne.
So I know the policy of Jersey Jack Pinball is to essentially use Williams off-the-shelf parts. But we've just heard from Matt that there's going to be some custom stuff. If any of that ever needs replacing, do we come to Jersey Jack or do we go to Planetary Pinball?
To tell the truth on this one, when we got it, what made this special to start out was an agreement with Rick Bartlett and Planetary Pinball to use Williams parts. So to be able to go into this thing and have flippers and pop bumpers and slingshots and up kickers and shooter parts and a cabinet and all the common parts without having to go back to the drawing board and trying to develop parts that either are covered under patents or you know, basically taking from other companies and making your own type of thing, whatever. We had that as a jump start, so that has helped us out. As far as I understand it, I mean, we're involved with this thing with Rick Bartlett. He always came into this as our parts guy. You know, how that all plays out down the road, how much do we bring in as far as our own sales go for our own unique parts, I think all of that still, you know, needs to be worked out. But being a game as, when you guys were talking about innovation, I mean, here's the thing about, I think of innovation as this game. It's a full-featured, mechanical, player interaction, deep pinball machine. Three levels, four brand new, unique toys that work with the ball. I mean, that's what makes this game innovative, is that it's taken a big step back to go back to the fully full-functioning, full-bodied machine that hasn't been there for a while. So we're able to put that together, putting, you know, 6 pounds in a 3-pound bag is what this game turned out to be. The wide body helped us. We picked up, it's only 3 inches on the width, and it's like 2 or 3 inches on the depth. But it's amazing when you can get another two lanes or you can get another feature in. When we had this list of what we wanted to see in this game after we had met over in Roselle or Itasca, it was amazing that this list was so long, but in time, we went through that whole list and we're able to fit all those features in this game. So, you know, the parts thing, there's standard parts, there's unique parts. How that's all handled between the two, you know, it's...
Okay, that's up for grabs then.
Yeah.
It's still working.
It's kind of a work in progress. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Not heard too much from the far end of the stage. So, Mark, if I could ask you, could you tell us a bit more about what you're working on right now?
I've been involved with doing a lot of the whitewood buildup, shot tweaking. You know, I sort of tried to get my tentacles into everything. I talked to Greg about the art. I talked to Keith about the rules. I try to, you know, contribute to all different parts. But mainly it's been wiring up the whitewood and tweaking shots and working with the mechs and stuff.
You say wiring up the whitewood, singular. Is it just the one?
At this moment.
And is that the first iteration? Tenth. Okay.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's constantly evolving, constantly changing.
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, so the question's about ball flow. Comparing it to games that are already out there, is it going to be fast ball flow or is it going to be stop and go? So I guess that's a designer question.
I think it's a good mix of both. It's got real nice flow to the game. But we do want to stop the ball occasionally. We got a 26-inch monitor up there that we want to show our graphics and have, you know, interaction with the player, give them a lot of information about what's going on with the game. But as far as flow goes, this one is real smooth. We've tweaked a good percentage of the game to really bring it all together and make it work left to right, you know, get a good ramp flows coming across, because there's a single plastic ramp on it, but it has a couple of different options to what's going to happen when you shoot that ramp, and there's a lot of crossing the play field and that, so I think everyone will be real happy with the flow of the game. It's hard to compare it to other games because of the three levels of playing. So, you know, you're going up into other levels to accomplish goals in the game, but the flow to get there is working really well. So it's kind of hard to, you know, we do have to stop the ball occasionally to get into some features. So we've got that with a real nice flow in the game. So.
Okay, I'm not sure what you know about how the game's laid out. So I've asked Jack if he can show us a video of the whitewood in action. So while he's setting that up, I'll give you a little bit of background, really. We are going to see a whitewood, which is the early stages of development of the game, so it would be too early to judge the game overall because it's still got a long way to go in development. It'll give you an idea of how the game's laid out. How many of you have not seen the layout of the playfield? Okay, so... All right, so just to remind you, could you give us a commentary, perhaps, of what the features are?
You'll get a little bit more out of what that is. This was... I didn't take much video because I didn't plan on showing this today, but this guy's a pain in the neck, and I guess I need to do that, so... Okay, so that shot you see goes around the house. You get a little idea of that. The house right now is not connected.
That's kind of self-explanatory.
Is there a website?
Yeah, as you guys can kind of keep up with what's going on at jerseyjackpinball.com. If you haven't done it yet, you can sign up for a weekly or I think it's a weekly or monthly email that comes out, kind of gives a little progress report on where we're at. Put up some pictures, some photos of what's been going on, kind of keep you up to date on the progress of the game. So that's jerseyjackpinball.com.
Is the blog available to anyone, or is that only customers?
Now, as a customer, we have there's a blog set up for customer use only. So guys that are people that have purchased the game, there's a more of a private blog thing that goes out between people that have purchased.
I've got a question for the audience. Those people that have ordered a Wizard of Oz, would anyone like to say why they ordered a Wizard of Oz?
The theme.
Okay. Anyone else?
Mr. Brennan.
Okay.
Steve Johnson.
You brought the fan club with.
Jack's been toting around a little clip that we put together for the Shooter Groove tune. Want to see it again? That was something that I kind of sang to the team when we first sat down, and Dennis said, "Oh, I don't know, Chris, there's so slow, the music's so slow." And was that about how it went? And I said, "Oh, you guys, you gotta hear how this is gonna go." And I essentially sang that clip that you've heard, more or less. You know, I did my best to sing all the parts, and they were all laughing pretty funny. It was a pretty funny moment. But so the idea of doing orchestral music, that seemed like a no-brainer, and that's just like the great stuff to do. It's really fun. We were given. I have sitting in my studio the full conductor score to the movie, so I am basically kind of liberally lifting textures essentially the same way that I did with Indiana Jones, and so super psyched about that. I think I can say that we will be using, we're still working on getting Judy Garland to come and do speech for us, but we're just, in case that doesn't work out, we do have a backup plan. We'll be auditioning to get people to do a voice of Judy Garland. To get the young Judy Garland, the Dorothy voice, as well as the voices of the characters that we all kind of identify as the really signature things. We'll be getting sound-alikes to do that. Say what? I can't do that one. Now, if there had been an Indian character in the game, I would have been right there with you, and you would have seen. But unfortunately, there was nothing like that. Follow the yellow brick road. But so that one didn't work. Thanks. All the way in the back. Well, somebody singing it. That's a debate that we're kind of having right now. My daughter's got a version that I'm hoping to slip in as an Easter egg somewhere. And did you know that? There you go. Now you know. I guess does that make it not an Easter egg? Okay, so, we've had a couple of ideas about it. I'm sure it's going to make an appearance somewhere in the game. It's unlikely to be music that you hear while you're playing the game, other than that it'll be a theme that'll kind of like drift as an inner voice in the middle of stuff. I mean, it's really interesting. There's a fairly small number of unique themes in the movie. You know, there's maybe what would you say, 15 or something like that, 10 to 15 unique themes that everybody knows, you know, the Harold Arlen classic stuff. And Harold Stothert, the guy who did the orchestration and composed the incidental music, basically just liberally lifted those themes and just sprinkled them all over the score. So, you know, no matter where you are in the movie, you're hearing If I Only Had a Brain or Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead or the Mario Land of Oz. I mean, it just goes on and on. And these little tidbits are used and kind of interwoven into this beautiful counterpoint. It's a stunning score. It's an awesome score, and I'm really honored to be stealing stuff and lifting that stuff. I mean, we have permission to basically, you know, do the same thing, to adapt those themes and those textures to pinball. And one of the challenges that I'm having is my favorite critic here, Dennis, is the guy who keeps on saying it needs to have more energy. It's got to go faster. It needs more bass and stuff like that. And he's right. It's right. You know, I mean, the you know, the basic kind of, you know, it's a very bouncy kind of a skippy game. It's not a skippy game. It's a wonderful game, but it's a, you know, it's a skippy soundtrack. So, you know, and I've got a really cool skippy thing going, but I can't put it anywhere in the game at the moment. So there's stuff like that going on, but we do have ways of sort of working those things out. And it's an awesome challenge to have. Really, really excited about it.
Thank you, Chris. Question right at the front from Rob.
About the development of this game being called Jack, I'm sorry, I just thought I'd throw out to you guys that maybe there was some additional pressures. Do you feel it's so different than what we
So the question is about, with the development of the game being so public, does that put pressure on the people up here? Doesn't put any pressure on me.
I could talk about that for a minute. When we yes, sir, Mr. Guarneri. When Jack started to release things to the world about the game, I fell out of my chair because I worked in an industry, you know, when there was four or five pinball companies, and it was secrecy until it went into a box, and Roger agrees with that over there. But to see the layout out there, you know, I had to buy into it. I did. I had to see the results, and the results have been incredible. I mean, to get through that 1,000 Emerald City limited editions and moving to the standard Wizard of Oz, it's already happened, and it's because of the releases, and it keeps people involved, and it works. So, you know, there's a bunch of guys up here that's been in the industry, and that was, what are you doing? But, you know, it works. And right now, there's a lot of the game that you haven't seen, obviously. You know, you haven't seen a fully working game, full code, you know, full blown out monitor, everything going on with the rules. You know, there's so much more, but yeah, it was tough to buy into that. That was a little rough at first. Yeah.
Thanks, Joe. On the aisle on the right. Yep. So the question's about whether games generally at Jersey Jack are going to be committee designed or designed by an individual?
I have to address that. Games have never been designed. There's never been a guy who was the guy where the buck stopped here. You know, I mean, Lawler thought, you know, would like to have thought that he was, and Richie would have liked to have thought that he was. But the fact of the matter is, it was always designed by committee. And those guys, you know, you checked your ego at the door at Williams, and we have learned that the hard way, that you have to do that here too. Because if you bring an idea that sucks, we're going to tell you that it sucks, and we're not going to make any bones about it. And that was as true of Eugene Jarvis as it was of Larry DeMar, as it was of Steve Ritchie and Pat Lawler, and anybody else who made a game. You know, somebody had to make the decision at some point, and you know, that's a you know, that's a legitimate point that, you know, at some point somebody makes a call. You know, so far we haven't been in a place where we've been paralyzed or stalled because we couldn't make a decision. We've been able to do it, you know, we've been able to seek the right answer to each one of these questions and to say, oh, well, looks like a white body, you know, so it's a wide body. You know, oh, it looks like it's a PC, so it's a PC. Well, it looks like it's a 26-inch monitor, so it's a monitor. And so, you know, we're all sufficiently on the same page that what you're talking about is not a problem. And I think that that's a little bit of a, you know, I think there's a little bit of a myth behind your question, and I just kind of wanted to poke that sucker with a little pin. So.
So all the questions are on this side. Guy with the hat on.
The owners for Customers Blog has been a fascinating journey for me. I hope to hear my appreciation of the members of the team that have contributed to that. Jack, could you elaborate or expand on your interaction with the customers on that blog?
You know, again, the part of it about being open and honest and transparent about what we're doing, I thought it was very important to involve the whole community, because I said on when I announced the company that I thought it would take a community to build the pinball machine and be part of it. And certainly it's a lot of fun to read the things that people write on there. And it's not as maybe it's not as edgy as RGP is. You know, our group is kind of a little bit like Munchkin Land, I've said, where everybody's just very happy and, you know, they go along and everything's great and there's not any name calling and everybody's okay and it's wonderful. It's kind of funny. But it's great to read the all the suggestions, the comments, concerns. You know, John, one of the guys, has a map of where all the people are that live where all around the world that ordered games. And there are so many people collaborating on different things within that group that you just let them loose and they do it. And it's really kind of cool. And everybody feels part of it because you are part of it. It's not a just like I'm trying to say, well, you're part of it. You're really part of it. It's because of you that we're building the game. It's because of you that there's a company, because guess what? Hey, Mike, how are you? Welcome. You know, if I said I was going to build the game and start the company and we didn't sell games, I wouldn't spec build the game because nobody wanted it. Most people, when they start, you know, they have an idea for a product, they develop the product, and then they kind of hope that the market they're building the product for will go buy the product. In this case, this is something that really doesn't happen, that happened this way. And it's kind of crazy, because when you tell people a story, people can't believe it. That, wait a minute, you sold 1,000 games. Right. Where's the game? There is no game. What do you mean? Well, did anybody play it? No. Did anybody see it? No. How did you sell 1,000 games? Well, faith and trust, belief, in not only me, but the team and what we're doing. Also, there's a demand for the product, obviously. So if we've sold this many games now and the group is part of that, what happens when you have actually a real game? Well, my business sense, 36 years, will probably tell me we'll sell thousands of these games. So I'm not. We're also, another question that somebody asked me outside, we're not trying to build 3 or 4 games a year also. Somebody asked me about a second game. When's the second game? When's the third game? When you have your first kid, everybody says, that's nice. When you have another baby, you know, when you're having a third, when, you know, when it, everything's going to come. So, and the group is part of it. You know, we listen to all those emails. I get hundreds of emails. They get emails. They write back. They collaborate. Greg writes. Everybody writes. Keith writes. So it's a great community effort. So thank you.
Exactly. It seems like it's a community, not just a customer base. Okay, Mr. Red and Black. So, Chris, that one for you, Chris? Good sound system?
It's just incredible. It's so awesome. It's going to be breathtaking.
Can you say anything about the specifications of it?
600 watts. 600 watts. You know, the thing that's never... You never have enough. 600 watts. Did I say it was going to be 600 watts aside? No. It's no. The Achilles heel of pinball sound has always been that there's not enough voltage to generate sufficient wattage to drive a speaker that's probably not the most efficient. You know, if you take a kind of a pretty good microphone and a pretty good singer, and he runs it into a pretty good mixer, and it's a pretty good tape recorder, and it's a pretty good engineer, and it comes out some pretty good speakers, what you end up with is a piece of shit. Because each one of those things adds up to a little bit off the top, and a little bit off the top. So if you can start with a great program, and we've got great content that we're able, that I'm able to produce in my studio, and run it through a decent stereo preamplification system to a power amp that has enough voltage to generate a proper signal to the speakers, with enough headroom in its transformer to produce a clean, unclipped signal. It's really cool. And everybody knows what that sounds like because you sit in your living room or in your home theater and you listen to that kind of thing. We're starting to approach that. So we're really psyched. We're really psyched about that.
Okay. So thank you for that, Chris. And on that exciting note of whipping us up into a frenzy over the sound package, there's a couple of more things to do. I've got some awards to give out on behalf of Pinball Expo in appreciation of you all being here this evening. We'd like to get a group photo of the Jersey Jack team. And Jack still wants to take more questions. So, someone who hasn't asked a question before, Doc over there. Wrong Doc. The other doctor. Dr. Scott. So, how many new patents in the development of this game?
I'm not going to disclose that right now. There are several that we've applied for and different things that we've modified. And we've also protected certain sayings and language and things that the company owns, its own intellectual property. So even though we have the right to use Bally Williams, we're creating our own intellectual property too.
Okay. Anyone not asked a question got one? White T-shirt.
Will it be multi-ball if there is something?
Multi-ball. How many?
Definitely multi-ball, and it's a five-ball game. So we can play with two-ball, three-ball, four, you know what I mean? So there will be multi-ball modes that up to five balls.
Okay, thanks. Doc Pinball?
LBG had a problem with distributing around the world. What are you facing on getting your game out around the world?
We have one of our distributors here this evening, Bert. Stand up, Bert. Bert. So, Bert, come up here a second. Come here. Come here. Come on. Come on. Come on up here. Come on up. Tell us a little bit about you and why you became a distributor and what country and all of this good stuff, where your territory is. Come on up here.
Why Jersey Jack? Well, there's demand for good pinball machines. A lot of rubbish was produced in the last few years. I unpacked just 2 weeks ago my Tron limited edition, and my technical guy, it took 1.5 hours to start the game and to actually play on it, because a lot of things didn't work. So that's nice, taking a pinball out of a box and then it doesn't work.
What countries are you covering?
What countries? France, Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands.
Okay. And will you have limited editions for sale?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. Okay, cool.
We sold 22 games.
Lovely.
22.
Excellent. Okay.
We actually had the biggest distributor get in touch with us from Belgium, right? What was it, Sebin, whatever? So, you know, we sent the emails to certain distributors around the country, and I didn't want to, like, cannibalize different pinball manufacturers' distributors. So I really wanted alternative distributors that had our product that would do a really good job with our product and not have it be just one more item in their market basket. So if they have our product and they promote our product, we're going to support them and help them to be very successful. Our distributor in Australia, Bumper Action, they've sold more than 100 games in Australia. David Steen and Dell, Del Reese, you know, they're great distributors. We have distributors really around the world, and we have several distributors in the U.S. Is Jesse Trueblood here? Jesse's a distributor. We have, I don't know who else. We sufficiently sold what we needed to sell initially, so apparently that worked.
Okay. Thanks for that. Jim, can I ask you about what you're doing at Jersey Jack Pinball?
I'm doing all the purchasing, sourcing all the parts. Obviously, this was a great start with the Williams catalog to start with already. We were able to go through and obviously give you the flippers, bumpers, all the things that feel good in a pinball that we heard for years when we, you know, me and Joe, we worked at Stern Pinball for years, and all we kept hearing for years was, you know, Williams flippers, this is what you got to use. The Stern flippers are horrible. And obviously they're using them themselves now. You know, it's a challenge to go through and source the amount of parts and keep track of everything that's in this game.
Didn't fall off the wall. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, other than doing purchasing, doing all the bill materials, I am, you know, coordinating stuff with everybody, helping them keep in line a timeline so we know where we're at, so we can keep everything on track and keep this guy from emailing me and calling me every day. I'm going to turn my phone off. That's what we do. And that's what I'm doing.
Thanks very much, Jim. Any more questions? Wow. Okay, black T-shirt straight ahead of me. So what's your schedule for getting subsequent games out? I think you addressed that, didn't you?
Get this one on the line. Build this one.
So it's one at a time, one model at a time. Okay. There was a question over here. I think this is going to be the last one. Yeah, green shirt. Why VGA for the video monitor? Is that a Keith question?
I suppose. I mean, I don't know how else to... I mean, I guess the only other option you really have for driving a monitor is, you know, like HDMI or something. I mean, it's, you know, VGA works fine. You know, why mess around with HDMI and everything that's involved in that? I mean, you don't need an HDMI cable to output a decent quality to a monitor. I mean, I have a monitor, and people make fun of me for it, you know, because I brought it in the office one day. It's like 13 years old, and, you know, it's 1600 by 1200 and weighs 50 pounds or whatever, and, you know, it's run off of VGA. There's not really any reason not to, you know, not to use something else when you don't really need to. I mean, motherboards that support it are plentiful and, you know, replaceable. And, you know, serviceability is a big, you know, thing that we have. And so we don't need people, like, troubleshooting HDMI issues because you got the wrong cable or something. You know, just get the pins from one place to the other with VGA and you're in good shape.
Thank you for that, Keith.
Shane, your motor. Is there a final decision on that? Okay. And then the dollar bill acceptor for someone who's crazy enough to operate the game.
Bill acceptor is included for an operator.
Okay, now when I operate it, if you were operating the game, what would you set it?
$1 play, 6 games for a $5 bill.
Okay, I think we've been very privileged to have so many people up on the stage tonight. And
just real quick, I just wanted to say one thing, and that is, you. Thanks, man. Thanks for everything. All right. You've heard of CSA? Anybody? CSA? Community Supported Agriculture? Anybody? If you don't know what that means, you will. Okay, but it involves paying farmers $600 at the beginning of the year, and then you get a basket of whatever's in season that week for the rest of the season. It's a great thing for the farmers, great thing for you. You eat the fresh stuff. It's a great deal, and you're all going to do it someday. It's my prediction. Mark my words. This is community-supported pinball. What we're doing, by releasing the game to... what we're doing by releasing pieces of the game is we're keeping you guys involved and keeping you connected. The blog keeps us connected to what you want, and you are helping us make this. You demanded that we make this game. You demanded that Jack start this company, and we're doing it. And we have a guy like Keith doing rules the way that he does rules because that's what you guys wanted. And we're going to make that game. We're going to make this game for you. And this is the first time that's ever happened, is that we've made a game for you guys. We'd been making a game for all kinds of other people that we thought we were making games for, that all the thousands of people and the tens of thousands of people that we thought cared about pinball game. But you guys are the people who care about pinball games, and we're making this game for you. And that's a first for this company. And so thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone in this room. Thanks a lot.